playing the webcomic Beacon drinking game on this podcast. We'll kill you.
News and commentary on the webcomic Beacon newscast.
We'll just record like this and pray. Welcome one and all to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast episode 26. This is the newscast for June 26th, 2011. This will be the only ever time that those two numbers line up properly for the foreseeable future. So until February 125th, I think, just cherish this and maybe give it a moment. With me today on the show, as usual, is Alex of Alex's Guide. Hey, good to have you back, Alex.
Thanks. It's good to be back.
So you're over whatever sickness prevented you from being in.
Well, last weekend was Pride here in Columbus, and I went out with some lesbian friends, and I got very sick the next day, and it was literally right before the show was supposed to start. I was Googling about how to clean things up, and I noticed what time it was, and I'm like, oh God.
Yeah, I saw your tweet.
I can't do this. Most
kind of tweet I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I didn't know you could groan that much in a tweet, but yeah. all right, well, speaking of groaning, also with us today, two special guests, Ed Cho and Lee Chirolis, who are the luminaries, dare I say, behind the new webcomic Little Guardians, which can be found at littleguardianscomic.com. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
So for those that aren't familiar with your new and enthralling new comic, am I overselling this? I actually do really like it.
For those as enthralling as it can be in 8 pages.
It's
in
really pages, cool looking.
So yeah. Okay, so tell everyone maybe a quick blurb for your new comic. What's the elevator pitch, if you will?
Well, I mean, it's a new comic we're publishing online. It's called Little Guardians. Each village kind of has a guardian that helps protect them against these evil demons that come to attack it. And then our story starts off with the current guardian fighting this nasty skull-looking dude coming to town while his wife is giving birth to the...
The guardian's wife, not the demon's wife.
Right.
Yeah.
Presumably to the next guardian in line.
The demon's wife could be up to, you know, she could be in labor. That could be why the demon's so ticked off and he's attacking... You know, he doesn't know what else to do. He's been kicked out of the delivery room. He's very angry.
That's a good twist. The demon's wife is also having a baby. I did not think about that.
Everyone's having babies that day.
900 nice. Babies.
The prologue starts where, like, the current guardian, his child is going to be his successor. So he's really, like, this is very important. He's really kind of stressed.
Gotcha.
It's like the future of the village. Lies in that, but okay.
Nice. So Lee, you draw it, and Ed, you write it. Is it really that simple, or is it more of a kind of mixed bag?
I mean, we created it together. We laid down a lot of the kind of the what we wanted to accomplish with it, but when it came down to like write the scripts and kind of the stories, scene to scene, I did a lot more of that with feedback, and then Lee designed pretty much everything from the characters, the world, to all that, and. Even page layouts, he probably did 90% of it. I was there when we laid it out together, but he was doing the grunt work.
I'm the Photoshop monkey.
Yes. And the website design was all him and his wife, Sam, who we have to thank. Put all that together.
Mm-hmm. See, now there's some news we should cover this week. Sam officially took Random Assembly down off of maybe updating at some point. It's officially dead.
I don't know if it was this week, but yeah, Sam killed Random Assembly.
Oh, it was this week. Trust me.
Breaking news, people.
Breaking news. All the time. Anyone that does a comic about Chip Kids, the Learners, has my attention. It is that simple.
Sam loves Chip.
Yeah. Now, you guys are both members of the Indie Webcomics group?
Yeah. Yeah, IWG is our the Indianapolis version of any, like, I know there's the DC webcomic meetup in there.
Yeah, it's kind of fallen off a bit in recent months, but I think it still exists in some form or another. There's still a forum with Viagra ads on it because no one's bothered to spam.
Must be a big problem for that group.
Right. Well, we try not to talk about it at the meetings. Maybe that's why we're not having meetings. We're too busy using the Viagra ads.
That's private.
Right. We don't talk about it. The closest thing we have. Well. A lot of the people from it are now Super Art Fight people, so we kind of, you know, all keep in touch through that, or at least most of us do. So, yeah. Yeah, it's great to see. Now, you guys were pretty much in the founding of the webcomics group, right?
Yeah, I went, I kind of helped with one other guy, you know, sent out the first couple of emails where we're like, hey, all you people that are, you know, that live near us, you guys do comics and we do comics, we should, like, get together and have beers sometime. And then from then on, we started meeting once a month. And I organize it actively. Ed's one of the regulars and a good friend of mine. So actually, didn't we meet through it?
Yeah. You had that. And I was doing an old comic called Alan Scout. Actually, I think at that time I just started it. It's a web comic about my cats, and it ended about a couple months ago. And that's how I met Lee, and we just kind of became friends and said, we need to work together.
So did you draw that comic about your cats?
Yes, very poorly, but I did draw it. Yeah. There's a link to it on the main page.
Oh, that's good. Awesome. All right. Well, with that, I'm sure some more stuff will come up through discussion, but let's start hammering through all the articles for this week. So first of all, we unfortunately have to start with some sad news. Comic book artist Gene Colan, who's probably most famous for his Tomb of Dracula series in the Marvel 70s, in the 70s with Marvel, that makes more sense, unfortunately passed away this week, and his stuff was pretty damn awesome. The man knew how to shade leg muscle like nobody's business, and
yeah.
It sounds like a joke, but for those of us that actually draw know, sometimes that can look like a tumor, and the man had it down. So there's a link to an article over at Bleeding Cool that you can find over at our website, webcastbeacon.com, as you can to all the links to all the articles we'll be talking about today. Were any of you guys Gene Colan fans? I know I actually looked back after seeing this and found that I actually somehow wound up with one of his comics.
Well, I read somewhere, didn't he create Blade or co-create Blade?
Yeah, he did. Character,
later played by Wesley Snipes.
Yeah, where he really rose to fame.
That's all I know him from, and also Howard the Duck.
Oh, yes, Howard the Duck. I mean, you can't go wrong with some Howard the Duck action. okay, well, we'll move on to the next article. Man, Howard the Duck is just such a great derailer. Every time. Okay, so unfortunately this week there's been some upheaval over at Webcomics Nation, the popular site that's known to host a lot of comics and has kind of a business model associated around it as opposed to being just an artist collective or something. Unfortunately, forgot to renew some domains and had some issues with that coming up that has pissed off a fair number of their people. And there's links to their forums where people are discussing, does this ring the death knell, if you will? And the article starts on Comics Talk. There's also news of it on Fleen, just to make sure we cite our sources. And you can find the links to all that at webcastbeacon.com. Are any of you guys familiar with or read any comics on Webcomic Nation?
Nope.
No, I don't.
I do read the Glass Urchin.
Super popular. Which one?
Glass Urchin is an autobio comic.
That is not on Webcomic Nation.
Isn't it? It was listed on their website.
Really?
Yeah, oh, I thought I saw it there. Maybe it's just a mirror then, but
I think it's just a mirror because I know that's with Nerd Comics.
Yeah.
So, I was unaware of that. My apologies. Okay. And also, mentioned somewhat in brief, more comic book legal defense fund coverage. The ever-exciting legal side of comics has had some issues lately. There's a new Tennessee law that threatens you to It's now considered illegal to post things online that cause, quote, emotional distress, which, I'm sorry, I thought that was pretty much everything on the internet.
That's like the most ridiculous thing I've read.
Yeah.
So it's a Tennessee law. Does that mean the website has to originate in Tennessee for it to be under this law? Or if you view it in Tennessee, is that, like, how do they govern this?
Part of the
law that's trying to be passed is that any social networks or anything using servers located in Tennessee can be accessed by the authorities without a warrant if certain conditions are met.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's been a lot of server seizing lately. I don't know if you guys heard about Instapaper, the popular service, had their server in a cluster that was also on the same server cluster as some spammer, unfortunately. And the spammer got seized by the FBI, which also seized the servers of Instapaper. So all of their stuff was getting pulled as well. So the laws on this stuff are still very much in flux.
Yeah, I use Instapaper like crazy. So will I get more spam then because of that? Or?
all your secrets are pulled by the FBI. So
awesome.
Luckily, there's so many of you out there that they probably won't have time to get to you.
Good.
Which is why you have Instapaper. So you can
exactly.
Get to
I don't have time for the FBI to get to me. I use Instapaper.
Also, mentioned rather quickly, so we can save some time for the meatier stuff. Amazon is supposed to be releasing a full-featured Kindle. So maybe as soon as August news is. And remember that Amazon has kept a lot of this more kind of secretive, but the full-featured Kindle would have a lot more ability to compete with the iPad, also possibly things to compete with, comics readers and that sort of thing, and maybe its own apps. So we'll talk more about apps later in the show, but be on the lookout for that. Especially my mom, who needs a new Kindle because I stepped on hers by accident, I swear. I know. Anyway.
Ross is the Kindle killer.
Yes, Ross is the killer. Well, she'd leave it on a beanbag chair. But anyway, so now an article that I think we could maybe spawn a little more discussion. There is news of a failed Kickstarter. Now, we've talked a lot about successful Kickstarters here on the show. This time, we get the chance to talk about a failed Kickstarter. So there's a series online called Comic Book Diner. It's written by... lost the names. Of course
John
it did.
Gallagher.
John Gallagher, thank you. And they tried to have a Kickstarter to create a graphic novel box set. They were trying to raise $10,000. Unfortunately, only made it to about $4,500, just under. And because of this, now are trying to kind of step back and say, well, how do we step back and what do you guys actually want? Is it what we're offering? Is it my shirt? You know, what is it that made this not work? So I think it's as equally good as it is to analyze all the successful Kickstarters that we've talked about. I think it's good to see someone kind of stepping back and analyzing why this one didn't work. And so one of the things they talk about is maybe it's the offerings that are the issue. We offered hardcover. What if instead of trying a box set, we offered hardcover versions in the place of a box set? Would you like that? Huh? Maybe. And maybe increasing the number of cameos that they could do in order to, you know, raise the money and have Kickstarter incentives and stuff. So what do you guys think? Do you think resubmitting to Kickstarter is like admitting defeat? Do you think these guys stand a chance of going another round? Would you guys submit to it? What do you think?
Well, first of all, I think it's a shame it didn't get through because I know John Gallagher is the creator of BuzzBoy.
Yeah,
which is,
really,
I guess, one third of the webcomic, or what's it called? The Diner?
Diner Comics, I think.
Is that comic right? Book Diner. Yeah, it just says John Gallagher's Comic Book Diner.
Yeah, and like one third of that is John Gallagher's BuzzBoy. and who I picked up at a con years and years ago, and I was happy to see. I actually was aware of the Kickstarter campaign, but I just heard, through you guys, just heard that they failed. For my part, I didn't contribute to that campaign because I'd already contributed to like four or five other Kickstarter campaigns, and I'm out of money. So I wanted to support them, but I just couldn't.
So that's interesting because we've talked in the past about how having access to Kickstarter makes you have access to more of a community that you might not have had access to if you just posted a pre-order thing on your site. But that's interesting because you're lumping in that Kickstarter with every other Kickstarter. It's like, oh, well, my Kickstarter budget is up.
Yeah. So
maybe if he was on his own site, then maybe psychologically that wouldn't have got, that could have gone the other way maybe. So
is this a new comic that he's starting, or is this just a box set? Because I wonder if that has something to do with it, because a lot of Kickstarters are kind of new projects, so they're kind of excited about it. This is something that is kind of existing, and 10 grand is kind of a lot, so maybe like they just figure they can get it somewhere else, or this particular box version is just not the thing to look for, and there's a lot of fresh ideas out there versus something that's just going to be a box set of existing work, maybe.
Yeah. What's funny is I'm on the website for Comic Book Diner and there isn't much, and I think that might be part of it. Now, here's what I think is the most interesting part. So, the last post on their site is 4 hours until Kickstarter kick closes. Things look grim. Can our heroes come out on top? And obviously, as we know now, they didn't. Do you guys think that having an unsuccessful Kickstarter is something like having a coffee stain right on your crotch and everyone thinks you peed your pants? I mean, does it make you really look bad to do something, you know, to put yourself out there on a site that makes it so obvious that you failed?
I don't think so. I mean,
to be worrying about?
What are the percentages of people that make their full, like, campaign, I wonder?
It's less than 50%.
Yeah. So I mean,
I know I would feel really anxious if it happened to me. So that's why Kickstarter kind of terrifies me.
Yeah. I mean, you are so kind of out there. Your numbers are so in everyone's face. I mean, that is kind of a concern.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're just asking for free money. So
yeah, that's true. I mean, you have nothing to lose. It's true.
I mean, do bums on the street get upset if, like, people don't throw nickels into their cup?
Okay, better question, though. Do bums on the street do better with some coins in their jar versus more or less? And I'm pretty sure studies have shown that if you have, like, a dollar's worth or so in there already, but not too much, and you keep it, you know, almost empty like that, but not empty, that you actually stand a better chance. I'm pretty sure.
I don't want to compare aspiring creators to bums.
Let's back away from this.
That's going to be us in a year or two, I guess, when we're ready to put together book collection one of Little Guardians. And we're totally looking at Kickstarter.
Oh no, I'm looking at Kickstarter too. I mean, I think it's a great resource. I'm just trying to have an interesting discussion here, guys. Anyway, okay. Well, we'll move on. We'll move on to the next article. So
I wish him luck, though. John Gallagher's great.
Yeah, totally. And if you guys haven't. You guys out there in the Ustream and out there in general have not yet donated to a Kickstarter or hit your Kickstarter budget yet, consider supporting John Gallagher when he puts his back up. So next article comes to us from Comic Book Resources. It's about Wonder Woman and what exactly makes her tick. In fact, the article is called Wonder Woman, What Makes Her Tick. So a lot of talk has been had lately about feminism in comics. There's been pants, no pants, a series of issues. Alex, you totally missed out on the fun pants, no pants discussion. What are your thoughts? Pants or no pants?
Pants aren't the answer to the problem. Mm-hmm. I don't mind the pants, but that's just kind of putting a Band-Aid on a gaping flesh wound.
The pants Band-Aid, if you will.
The pants Band-Aid.
Pants Aid?
Pants Aid.
That sounds
like
raising money for pants. I wonder if we have any British listeners right now who are really laughing about the fact that pants means underwear.
Pants.
Really curious about that. the trouser debate? Should we train? No. Anyway, female characters, what they say in this article is basically what writers shouldn't do is fuss with the character. That's fine, though, because a certain amount of fussing is necessary. Spurgeon has implied it in his original quote and some of the comics he made later. Stop fussing implies that some fussing is already made, and Spurgeon doesn't appear to judge that taken literally. He's just saying that there's a time to put that away and just write some damn adventure stories. When he says in the comments, embrace what you like and streamline past what you don't, he assumes that some thinking has been given to what you like and don't like about the character. So basically, sometimes you need to shut the hell up about what the character is and just write the damn story. And I think that's pretty true. What do you guys think? Characters driving the story or story driving the characters?
I mean, I always think the story needs to drive the characters. You kind of have to have... Because it's easier to write a story and fill it with characters versus creating characters and write a story around that. But this article is interesting because at one point he wants to say, you know, don't overthink it, is what he says about Wonder Woman. But at the same time, because she is a woman and it's a male-dominated industry for comic book movies, everyone is going to overanalyze, you know, if she eats a piece of cake and what that means. And, you know, if she's wearing pants or no pants, is she too sexy, not sexy enough? And it's kind of messed up that... It is this, I don't know.
There's so much baggage.
Yeah, there's like too much baggage
yeah,
with it.
I've had a lot of trouble figuring out Wonder Woman. And, you know, I need to like her, I feel like, but I've just been having trouble, you know, coming to what she is all about. And this article actually kind of, like, helped me figure it out a little bit. The problem is that Wonder Woman herself is, it's like the article says, she needs to be, you know, she should be the Sean Connery of her gender. Men want to be with her and women want to be her. And she's supposed to be very uplifting and empowering and stuff like that. But in all of these new reboots and stuff, people overthinking it, they kind of want to turn her into the schlubby kind of hero who then gets awesome powers, sort of like, you know, Green Lantern and Spider-Man and all sorts of things like that.
Right. So, and that's not who she is because she was just trained her whole life.
Exactly.
Right. Now, Ed and Lee, I'll put this to you guys. You're starting this new comic. You clearly have a lot of, you know, 50% people living in the village of Little Guardians, presumably female. You're starting off with, you know, some male parts with the badassery, but then you've got the birth going on. So when you guys are writing female characters, do you and you're male, you know, do you guys overthink it or worry about, like, am I writing her too much this way or that way?
Yeah, it's funny. It's so early for our story, and actually, the prologue is such an introduction. But in chapter one, our main character is actually a young girl who's about 12 years old. So it's kind of funny because we introduce Tane and he's kind of the badass in the village and he fights. But really the story is going to center around a young girl at the item shop and kind of her journey in this village. And there's actually a lot of very strong female characters in Little Guardians that are at least the main characters in it. So, I mean, I wouldn't say I thought of that like while I was writing. Yeah, yeah, but it just kind of came out that way.
Mm-hmm. So. All right. And Alex, do you ever think of it the other way? You know, as a female writer, that you're writing men to not man-like or something? I'm just curious if it goes the other way.
Possibly a little bit. I mean, my male characters from Garinos are not the strongest characters that I've ever done.
Like, so physically?
Or, you know, as far as their writing and characterization.
Right. All right. I'm always, anytime people talk about female writers, I always think of the line from...
It's not something about how I don't think that I don't get men and how to write them. I just didn't do a particularly good job with them in that story.
Gotcha. I always think the writing line from As Good As It Gets when Jack Nicholson says, I write a man, then I take away reason and accountability. I don't agree with that statement. I just think of it. Anyway.
It's a good line.
Line. I mean, it's not accurate, but it's a good line.
Yeah, it's there for a laugh.
Yeah. I wonder if you could say that. What would be the opposite thing about men? Like, I write a woman, and then I take away, I don't know, breasts.
Tact.
No, tact. Oh, there you go.
Tact.
Okay. Yeah, I've always found it interesting that Wonder Woman is always, like, the person that, the go-to, you know, female character. I mean, I know she's been around the longest in a lot of ways, but there seems like there could be so many other female characters to go with, you know, as the key person. I've never felt like she's, like, the one to focus on. But
well, she's kind of the female version of, like, Superman.
Right? Very,
I mean, I know their origins are different, but...
Yeah, but no...
I think the overall, like, consciousness of America, they view, like, her as a female Superman. I know she's an Amazon woman, but she's kind of that iconic red, white, and blue. And she doesn't look Amazonian to me. She looks like, you know, just an American.
Yeah, I've never thought she looks anything except, like, she's tall. They just draw, like, you know, a girl who's about 5'6", and just scale her up a little bit. Free transfer.
Oh, yeah. They draw her as a very girl-next-door kind of chick. Because I remember like 10 years ago when they were talking about doing a Wonder Woman movie, I think they were talking about doing like Jennifer Lopez at one point. And I just thought, oh, like she's more Amazonian looking. That's an interesting kind of take to make her actually look ethnic.
Mm-hmm. I'm all for something like that. She's supposed to be Greek, but she's whitey white.
Yeah, well. Okay, anyway.
What other women characters would you want to be kind of that iconic woman character then, if it's not Wonder Woman?
Well, I mean, first of all, the fact that it's like there's allowed to be all these different types of male characters, and then we're talking about only one female character is part of it. But I mean, why not bring up, you know, your Catwomans of the world, or, you know, who's a very different character.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually trying to think of others, but
Power Girl.
Of course, yeah. Power Girl. Power Girl, they just kept drawing her boobs bigger. And so they just kept drawing them bigger, and no one noticed. And then
I just call her Power Boobs.
Yeah, that's where power comes from, right? I mean, that's like, isn't that like, they're like cosmic or something? I don't know.
I don't know if I'm doing her a disservice, though, because I just don't read Power Girl, so I don't know what else is going on other than just
maybe the they changed it to Empowered Girl.
Yeah, I don't read Power Girl either. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's some. So there are a lot of deviant art tutorials found this week. There were some good ones on. I thought the fur one was pretty good because honestly, fur is a pain in the butt. And that one was pretty interesting. There's also ones on Photoshop actions for those that aren't familiar. Anime eyes, pixel art, scars, hairstyles, cloth, and lips. Plenty to.
So many lips.
Busy. Yeah, so many tips, so little time. I don't know if there's really much discussion that needs to be had on them.
Go check them out.
But it's nice that you guys are providing the links for those. I did check out a couple of them, and I think it's just while the information is good, the way that they're displaying it, I had some trouble following some of them, but I know someone out there will get something out of it. So
yeah. And I did think the hairstyles one was kind of interesting to see, because I know there are plenty of times where I kind of go, okay, what kind of hair should this person have? And I'm kind of sitting there trying to think of it. And it is nice to have kind of a big-ass glossary of different hairstyles. So that one's cool. Oh, and one on drawing cloth, which I think a lot of people struggle with. You know, all the folds and the shadows and all that jazz can be pretty tricky. So there's some good examples there. And, yeah. So, okay, with that, we'll move into our break.
Time for a break?
Yeah, it is time for a break. Thanks. So now stay tuned for a message from whoever the hell talks next.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or... leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network,
covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Here we are back at the Webcomic Beacon newscast. Are we changing that to the Webcast Beacon newscast, or is it still the... Yeah, well, whatever it is. Here we are, guys, episode 26, back into things. Quick shout-out to those of you in the chat room. Whenever we record the show, which is Sunday mornings at 10:30, right around when your hangover is wearing off, you can join us here in the Ustream chat room. You can head over to our website, webcastbeacon.com, and click in live broadcasting live in the top left corner, and come join us. Say hey to, well, Alex, you're in the chat room too. Jazz and Jess, hey, how's it going? Two Kinds, and Dante Shepard of the webcomic survivingtheworld.net, which you should all go check out. Anyway, back into the news articles for the week. The highly successful Harry Potter franchise now had this countdown. No one was exactly sure what it was counting down to. Now we know it was counting down to Pottermore, which is a new online website that's sounded like Wikipedia-based creation of Harry Potter stories from the video that they have posted. Did you guys have a chance to look into what all this fuss is about?
I thought I read somewhere that she's going to release the Harry Potter, the seven main Harry Potter books in digital format off this site.
Yeah, well, she does retain the digital rights to her books, and there is talk of also ebook publishing on her site, both current books or things based on them. And the video that she posted with some cool stop motion animation too talks about, well, we're going to open up the world and we want you guys to help shape the world and all that kind of stuff too.
So, but yeah, like she's crowdsourcing more Harry Potter content.
Yeah, it sounds,
yeah,
it's
a big part
like
of it is that she's kind of releasing all of her like notes and everything around the backstory of the world and stuff like that, which I think is pretty cool. I'm very interested in devouring it when it starts to go up.
Yeah.
I'd rather her take all that info and just put it into a new book, but she's not gonna.
Right. At this point, once you finish a franchise like that, anything more you do is seen by adults as another thing to make money, as opposed to anything new, which would be highly judged or whatever. But the real thing is, her royalty rights are about 10% per book, okay? So all these books she sold, she could have, if she'd sold them herself and sold, you know, about a tenth of them, she would have made the same amount of money.
Yeah, but she would not have sold a tenth of them if she had sold them herself, so...
This is the classic debate, right? But, so that is seen as a big part of it. There's a link to an article over at Daily Cartoonist that goes into releasing this ebook structure. So you guys can go check that out. Now, have you guys considered, you know, going with a publisher or trying to get a publisher at all for anything? Any of us here?
We tried to pitch Little Guardians for print. That was the original intent. And we decided to go online because it was just too dang hard to get published print and too expensive to self-publish, we thought, on our own.
For now.
We still want to print them in book form. And it's funny because like the current pages are really standard comic book size. And we've had a couple people tell us, well, if you're doing it online, maybe the next chapter should be kind of more streamlined for it. But in our minds, well, we still do want to print it. And we like this size, right, even though it's not ideal for web browsing.
Yeah.
Well, I will say I have some publishing news myself from this week. I spoke to a publisher about in December, and they're really interested and they really wanted a pitch. And so I worked really hard and I got them a pitch.
Oh, for the system?
For something based on the system. They didn't want to just do comps. They wanted to do, you know, new content that was themed and not just kind of all over the place like it tends to be. And so I put it all together. I worked really hard on it. I sent it to him, and crickets. Nothing, heard nothing back. Flash forward to yesterday, I get an email that says, hey, so sorry, I never saw that email that you sent. Oh, I'm so sorry. We don't want to publish your book, but I'm so sorry that it took me so long to tell you that.
good.
So, yeah.
Thanks.
So,
thanks.
Yeah, thanks for that. Okay, enough of my sad trombone. We'll move on to a series of articles. So the New York Post is blocking access to their website on the iPad using the Safari browser. So if you're just on trying to get to their site using the WebKit Safari browser that comes on the iPad, they'll say, no, you can't do that. You need to buy the app in order to access the site. Meanwhile, the site loads fine on, say, a Droid or a computer or anything like that. So obviously they've taken some flack with this.
Here's what I need to know, though.
Yeah,
like, if you're not on the iPad, is it free?
Yeah.
Like, the entire site's content is free?
It's free, yeah.
Okay, then that's just retarded.
Yeah, it's stupid. Well, it implies that there's value in the mobile. Like, I find it weird that Hulu is free on a PC, but on an Android or iPad, you have to pay for it.
You have to buy the app.
Exactly. There's this implied, for that extra convenience, you have to pay for that. But if you want to sit down at your computer and watch it, that's fine. It's just it's really strange to me where they draw that line. Why this is a paid service and why this is not. There's still, like, you can still do ads and everything. I don't know. It's just very odd to me.
Now, this is also paired with a few other stories just to kind of open it up. Mobile apps are still seen as doing more web traffic than the web on mobile devices. So more is being done of browsing through apps than just browsing through the browser. On apps, according to an article on GigaOm, which has kind of a breakdown of for the first time since Flurry, engagement time of apps and web smartphones software is used, blah blah blah. Yeah, okay, yeah. So this is just on smartphones. People are using apps way more than they are the actual websites. So this could mean...
Wait, does that mean website on their PC or website on their phone?
I think it's just the phone.
On their phone.
Okay.
So they're using their little app programs more than like a browser, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Which I can't say surprises me. I mean...
Yeah, it makes sense.
it's so hard to...
People are making tacos in my pie pan. I mean, it's like made for that. I don't know. This is weird.
Yeah, I mean, there's all this kind of leads to a debate about, you know, whether or not apps will win out over websites or websites will win out over apps. So that obviously could have some ramifications for those of us comicers that are, you know, we have websites. We don't necessarily have the ability to easily put out apps or stand out in an app market.
Some web comics are doing apps.
Let's see. Yeah, but that's a. I mean, as it is, webcomic artists have to worry about their website, the comic on their website, promoting their website, getting out any sort of merchandise that they might do, and now all on top of that, and an app that works and keeps updated and all that stuff. That's yet another plate to be spinning.
I don't know. I wouldn't want to read into it that much because I don't think the average... Because I use my smartphone a lot for a lot of things, but I don't actively think, that's on... Like, I still use a web browser and I use apps for some things. You know, I think if the content is worth going back to, it's not going to matter because it's not an active, I haven't used that app in a while and I need to use it. It's, I want that content. So, like for instance, PvP has an app, but I don't like their app. I prefer to read it on my web browser, on my phone even. So that's one where just the content itself makes me choose which version I'm going to read.
Yeah. Alex, got anything?
Yeah, I don't see myself doing any sort of apps for my comic for lots of the reasons that he already said. It's that, I don't have time to put one together. I don't have the money to pay someone else to put it together. And I feel like the website is just... as functional. I mean, I should probably make a mobile version of my site at some point, but for now, it's enough to just have it up there the way it is.
All right. Well, with that, we'll take another quick break here, and we will come back in just a moment. So stick around.
Another break?
It says in the thing, take break.
Oh, don't. Okay, if you see that in the thing, you don't need to take a break if you already took one.
It's in there twice.
Eric.
The script.
That's okay. We could just keep going.
You said one to two breaks. There's two.
I guess I don't have. Well, okay. All right, that's fine.
Over the past few years, I have engaged in several inappropriate conversations conducted over Twitter, Facebook, email, and occasionally on the phone with women I have met online. There's nothing inherently wrong with social media. What I did was a mistake.
Right now, the congressman is sending out some pics to some chicks, but there's collateral damage. Right now, constituents are seeing all his sweet little tweets about his stimulus package. Right now, he's going deep on the issues with the fine citizen who just happens to shoot porno. Like we don't know. But now it's looking like Wiener might get the shaft. He's been taking it hard, but the press just laughed. Right-wingers, teabaggers, and the liberal elite. They say the Beltway bugger got his ego stroked. If you friend him on Facebook, you might get poked. Maybe next time he'll think before he tweets.
This was a very dumb thing to do. I should not have done this, particularly when I was married.
Right now the whole world is trick-or-tweeting. Screen grabs of some abs and a tumescent wiener. Right now he's probably texting that he wants to pat you down like a TSA screener. Right now he says he never seen her and there ain't no misdemeanor cause he didn't Charlie Sheen her. But now he's gonna come cleaner cause he wants to hold your congressional seat. He's the other white meat, the kind that can't be beat. It's a 21st century Lewinsky legacy. He keeps his budgetary tool there in his lap. He's ready to bridge your partisan gap. Maybe next time he'll think before he tweets. Was she a campaign donor, a Seattle Washingtoner? Seems when he tried to phone her, he said,
"Hi, this is John Boehner." Wait, don't hang up. Hold on. Wait. Operator, can you reconnect me? Fast. Operator! Hello? Damn it! Hello! God, I was so close! Crap! Come on! Hello!
He'd be a totally rock-solid New York mayor, reaching out to touch every taxpayer. If he can keep it up between heartfelt apologies. But till then, he's just hoping they don't indict. That it suck, that it blow, that it totally bite. Oh, maybe next time he'll think and hit delete. Yeah, yeah. Maybe next time he'll think before he tweets. OMG, what an idiot. I mean, jeez.
My family didn't always have this name. In fact, my great-grandfather, when he came here from Ellis Island, changed it. His name, of course, was Harold Schmuck.
That was Before He Tweets, sung by Steve Goody, found at the Funny Music Project at thefump.com.
Keep going.
We're doing it live.
Notice.
Doing it live.
So,
and we're back.
Right. So, meanwhile, over in the chat room, Two Kinds is noting that most smartphone browsers display webcomic sites just fine, which I think is a pretty good point that, you know, why bother with all this app stuff if you don't have to, and whether or not the mobile market is locking down, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be a concern just yet for comic artists, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on. Also, there's an open letter to DC Comics going out about the new pricing model and about putting their backlog online. Why not put their backlog online? And this is from Robot 6 and links over to an article on Geek Dad, which then I think links over to somewhere else.
Wired, somewhere I think.
Daisy chain.
Right. So they've got all this content, and this would be kind of bringing DC Comics into a little more of the online comics, web comics model of why not offer all this content that we've already got out there. You know, it's out of print and no one's buying it anyway. So what do you guys think?
I think there is no reason why DC or Marvel or anybody wouldn't put old content up, like make it available, because I mean, as like I came into comic book, like superhero comics kind of late, and I do have interest in like you know, seeing all the movies that are coming out recently, like, oh, I want to go read those comics now. Like, I got on an X-Men kick when First Class came out, and I want to go back and read some old X-Men. You know, it would just be so easy if I could just download that and read it.
It's true, and it's just, I mean, I wonder if it's just scanning issues, you know, if all that scanning takes,
rights.
I imagine it would take a lot of man hours to actually get everything digitized if it isn't.
Not to mention they may just have to go back to artists and writers and pay them again, which yes. I'm sure they do not.
Royalties and whatnot, yeah.
Yeah, like when older comics were being published, I don't even think their contracts included like anything about digital distribution because it wasn't available then.
Well, I mean, I feel like we've gone through this for the last couple of weeks, but they've got a $3 price tag on a lot of their digital content right now. Meanwhile, most songs on iTunes are $1.29 or on Amazon or 99 cents. And then they say Angry Birds is only 99 cents. So let's look at that. A comic you read in 20 minutes versus a game that I'm still stuck on world 5, level 3. You know, and I've been playing every like 10 minutes for the last, you know, 6 months. I mean, that's just, it's an absurd thing that they're asking you to do is to pay this much money again when they're doing this. I mean, I don't know even why they bother.
Actually, you don't even have to pay the 99 cents to play Angry Birds. It's on, if you download Google Chrome, there's a Chrome version that you can just play for free.
Right.
Oh
yeah.
My God. I'm downloading Google Chrome right now.
It's like the beta version of the Google Chrome version of it.
I started playing it on my friend's phone because I don't have a smartphone. But if I can play it myself.
Okay. So over to an article on in Wired about the iPad could revolutionize the comic book biz or destroy it.
Yeah.
Voice.
Really?
How can it destroy it?
I
read it. I just don't understand his argument for destroying. Like, I can see it not working on the iPad, but
I don't know. Anytime that they talk about an industry, you know, destroying itself, I always think, well, if it destroys itself, you know, the whale oil industry destroyed itself.
That's true. The tobacco industry destroyed itself.
Right, but the comics industry, really? I mean, I don't know. I just still haven't met that many people that are reading comics on tablets. I mean, I'll start caring about articles like this. Though, by the way, there's some really cool illustrations with this article. I'll give them that much. But they're going over a lot of the stuff that we've talked about in the last couple of weeks. I just don't know if it really concerns us that much.
I figured it was this article or another one that we're going to link to maybe later, but Jim Lee was talking about it's a great gateway into print comics, and he thinks it can go hand in hand because some people who wouldn't walk into a comic book store might, you know, be interested in Thor, for instance, because of the movie, or kind of like you with the X-Men.
That's me.
Yeah, it just came out like, oh, I want to read some X-Men comics now because I like the new movie.
I need to buy a tablet, though, first. And then I can do that.
But, I mean, you can walk into a comic book store as well and buy those essentials that are $20 for 500 issues or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of see them going hand in hand, but at the same time, a lot was said when the Kindle first came out and the ebook distribution. But then we're seeing Barnes & Noble's kind of go under. We're seeing Borders struggle. Because it is
Borders
actually,
go under Barnes & Noble's struggle. Other way around.
Sorry. But it is having an impact on print, and then even Netflix is having an impact on Blockbuster. So it very well could impact the comic industry a lot. I'm not going to say it's going to destroy it,
yeah,
but it's going to definitely impact.
Well, comics will be around. It's just I think they'll jump to digital eventually. That's like my long-term prediction is, you know, say, I mean, you can always go buy the old books, but like everything new will be digital, I think.
And the problem is that the big two are trying to keep the comic book shops afloat, which I feel like it's just a slowly losing battle.
Well, yeah. That's one part of it. I think that's a pretty big part of it. But the other thing is that with the print market, you know, you need to be able to get your things into stores. And right now you could walk up to a store and maybe get your thing in. But to get your stuff on a digital platform, I mean, and sell it or something, is you have to go through all this app stuff. And you have to get your stuff onto either in Comixology app or in Graphically app or one of those, or you need to get your own app itself, and that's there's like a level of entry, another like wall of entry that exists that kind of is stacked against independent creators and publishers.
But you know, I think that same thing happened from the transition from print to web comics. I think because like myself, I'm not very tech savvy, and I'm glad Lee's doing our website because I really would not do it very well. But that's a big barrier for a lot of people that do pen and paper comics. And then now the web is out there and it's seamless for most people. But that was a barrier as well. So I think, in, you know, 10 years from now, especially with younger kids just being immersed in apps and creating them.
Right.
I think that barrier will become less and less, you know, unless you jump on board, so to speak.
How long until we start seeing tablet optimized webcomic sites?
I met a guy who he came to one of our meetups recently. We get new members coming in all the time,
right?
And they come and go. But he
has to do in Indiana. That's why, you know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why you get new members all the time, because there's nothing else to do.
Oh yeah. But he wrote and worked with an artist on this new comic of his specifically for mobile devices, and it was formatted to fit their screens and stuff. And they weren't even thinking about print; like they just went straight to digital. And it looked awesome, but you know, like since I'm behind the curve on getting my smartphone and digital tablet yet, you know, I wasn't his target audience, but Ed was. And like, yeah, didn't you check out his comic right away on your phone?
Absolutely. I mean, it's all landscape. It's formatted for the iPhone screen, and you just slide, and you don't have to tilt, you don't have to pinch to zoom. It's all kind of formatted. It's an easy read.
I wish I remembered his name, because then I would plug
Wes.
It.
it's Wes, but I don't remember his last name.
Oh shit!
Sorry.
Yeah, that must have been really hard to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, this kind of goes into our next story. So, am I skipping all over the place? Disney released a comic app, and there's a Burn Notice webcomic for those that like Burn Notice. Anyone, any other of you guys Burn Notice fans? I know I am.
I'm at the mercy of the DVD box sets because I don't watch first run TV stuff. So I'm only up to Burn Notice season 2, so I'm behind. But I love it.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll just mention those in brief. But so kind of on the topic, we're talking about where people get their news and where they read their syndicated comics. And according to this poll on Daily Cartoonist, and this obviously, this just to clarify, came from the Daily Cartoonist, and the survey itself was on there. 63% of people get their daily comic reading done online. Now, this is for syndicated comics and editorial cartoons. This isn't for, quote, web comics. So, as opposed to 25% reading in the local paper, or 5% buying the collections, or 7% not reading comics, which makes me wonder what they were doing on Daily Cartoonist.
Yeah.
Is this all news or just comic-related news?
This is all news, and then specifically comics.
And then there's the comics pie chart.
Syndicated and editorial comics.
Yeah.
Apparently, though, it was kind of a strict survey where you can choose multiple options for anything. I was reading some of the comments earlier.
Yeah. But I think it kind of pairs in with what we're talking about. So
yeah.
with that, we will move on to the next article about trademarks running amok as we go through our oddities section.
Amok.
I remember this one.
Amok is a great... God, I just love the word amok. So this comes from Bleeding Cool and links over the New York Post site, which we can see as long as we're not on an iPad. And there's a lot of branded people just wandering around as Mickey and Minnie Mouse and Elmo and stuff who are totally unlicensed, and people seem to be turning kind of a blind eye to it in New York City.
And they're like collecting donations, right?
Yeah, they're collecting donations. What are they collecting donations for? Or is it just like,
I don't know if it's ever explained.
Beer money.
Yeah, I think it's beer money.
Pretty much.
Really turned into it.
Like there's a guy running a Spider-Man costume and walking around at the corner by the theater that's running the Spider-Man musical.
See, I just think it's interesting because they're doing this, right? And they're, you know, kind of looking the other way. The alternative is they don't look the other way. They crack down on this. And what does that mean for cosplayers? What are they going to do? Go to every convention and be like, nope, sorry, you can't dress like that.
Well, I don't think cosplayers go around with a tip cup generally.
Well,
I think that's where the problem comes in, is when, because they're asking for money and using those trademarks to get it.
Maybe they're two separate things. It's like, I mean, if I happen to be wearing a Mickey Mouse shirt and I walk up to you and say, hey, can I have some money? That doesn't mean...
Well, yeah, you paid for the Mickey Mouse shirt, I hope. And then Disney got their money from you buying the Mickey Mouse shirt.
I'm not worried about Disney getting their money. Okay. So that we'll kind of mention brief. Over at College Humor, found on Bleeding Cool, is an article. On Bleeding Cool... They ripped it from College Humor, and it was drawn by that's been here on the podcast. The most empowered look for Wonder Woman ever, covered in pants.
That's awesome.
That's
an illustration by Caldwell, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, kind of reminds me.
Her shoes are even
like her pants. Shoes or socks.
Her shirt is pants.
I love the shoes. Pants.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of Quail Man. That much is going on.
Oh, yeah, with the belt on the head.
Yep.
She looks kind of angry and her eyes are askew.
The other ones are really good, too.
Yeah. And also, Marvel's first ever webcomic has been announced, and that's over on Cleefield Comics.
It's not announced.
It's an article about their first webcomic, which was released back in 1996.
Yes.
The Amazing Spider-Man's Sandblasted.
Cyber Comics, they were called.
Cyber Comics. Cyber Comics sounds so dirty.
No.
All right. And also mentioned brief, which kind of an okay article, but mostly just great to see King Cold out on the top of an article with its iPhone in his hand about the whole Verizon AT&T thing, kind of on the topic of apps and things. And finally, some other news that Doctor Who, Matt Smith, has just performed in a improv theater thing where you take 24 hours and write a play and then perform it. And he played Batman. And I forget who played Robin.
Awesome.
Someone just as interesting. God, I don't even remember who. But mostly just see Matt Smith dressed as Batman makes everything worth it in the world.
That's pretty fabulous.
Nick Swarsden was Robin.
Swarsden, right, yeah. Well-known comedian. And I love how they call him in this article, don't mess with Zohan star Nick Swarsden, which is something I associate with him at all. But, you know.
I think it's awesome, though, that the article mentioned, I mean, obviously it's inspired by the 24-hour comics Scott McCloud started.
Yeah, that's great to see that.
Which is sweet. I love seeing it, like, spread.
Shout out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Scott McCloud.
Oh, and finally, one other last bit of news. This, unfortunately, didn't make the feed. I have seen the first episode of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. I'm so ashamed.
Are you a brony yet?
That's overselling it.
Is that one on the news notes page? I can't find it.
He said he missed it.
Yeah, it's not.
That's Ross's personal news announcement.
Well, okay. I kept talking about it. You kept talking about how great it was. How could I not see what it was? I was like, oh,
I
good.
I think everyone needs to check it out.
Yeah, and clearly need to do that on a recorded medium where everyone's listening.
We're going to do the next Tropecast on July 3rd is going to be about ponies. And we're hopefully going to get Yamino on to talk about ponies with us.
Nice. Fun. All right. So that has been all of our news for here on the Webcomic Beacon Newscast, blah, which you can find over at webcastbeacon.com. Thanks to everyone for tuning in the news, Ustream. Can't speak today. Also, thanks to all of you for listening at home. If you have any articles that you would like to send us or any questions, comments, or comments on any of the things we talked about this week, tune on over to webcastbeacon.com, go to the newscast section, leave a post on this thread, which will have links to all the articles that we talked about, or send an email to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. We are watching the skies, so be sure to help make this into the community that we all want it to be. So thank you all for coming on the show this week. Thanks, Alex. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Oh, yes.
Ed and Lee, best of luck with Little Guardians. Now, that updates how often?
We're doing Monday and Wednesday. Every Monday and Wednesday, there's a new page up of the main story, and then every Friday is like extra bonus content Fridays. Awesome. So
Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Awesome. And as always, I've been Ross Scott of The System. My stuff can be found at systemcomic.com. And finally, let's give a quick shout out to Eric, who does all of our research. His stuff can be found at exiern.com. And of course, Fess, who's kind of pulling the strings from behind the scenes. And there he is. His stuff can be found at psiwebcomic.com. So go check out all of that stuff and support your fellow artists. So thank you all so much for tuning in. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We will see you next week. Those of you on the Ustream, stick around. Another show is coming up next. The core program is coming up next. I finally got that right. And we will see you next week here on the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Peanut butter and jelly, everybody. Have a good day.